And Jees asked me to talk about getting older with sickle cell disease. So we're all getting older. So I'm going to run through a few kind of bits and pieces and kind of what we're doing, and then ask questions at the end. So the first thing to say is that patients with sickle cell are living longer. So this is the good news bit. So I'm sure you all kind of know this. So I'm going to the bleeping bit. So now almost everyone born with sickle in the UK will survive to be an adult. That's obviously really great. And actually life expectancy, so on average, if we look at everybody with sickle cell disease in the UK, the best results from the best centres show that people are surviving into their seventh decade. So I'm sure that's not what a lot of you were told when you were growing up, but that's also really good news. And what it means, we've got increasing numbers of older patients. And that's really been apparent, because I've been a consultant now for about 20 years, and we didn't really have very many older patients. But now, well, I think most of the patients seem to be ageing at the same rate as me. But there's certainly a lot of patients of my age and older. And I think that's quite nice that people are just getting older as I get older, actually. So I've just got a couple of little graphs. So this one, if you look, so this brown line is people born in Jamaica in the 70s. And you can see this is kind of people dying before the age of 18, about 30%. But if we look here, this is a London cohort of people born in London between 1983 and 2006. And actually, they kind of basically all survived to adulthood. So that's a really big change over a couple of decades. And this is a similar kind of graph. And this just shows, this is when sickle was first recognised in 100 years ago now. And people died very young on average. And then it's just gone up and up. And over the last kind of 3 decades, since the 70s, it's just got higher and higher and higher. And these are the results now from King's, just down the road a couple of years ago. This is some work that Dr. Gardner did before she joined us here, and showed that survival there was kind of up to 67 on average. That meant that half of people would live older than that. And that's really impressive if you look how things have changed. And then the other thing is they've got more older patients. So this graph shows you, this is from the National Registry of Patients. And this just shows we've got a lot of young patients, but we've got patients right out here in their 40s, in their 50s, in their 60s, and above 70. And if we look, about a quarter of the patients in the UK are now over 40. And that's probably what we'd say was an older patient with sickle, although that is changing. And this is some data that we published a few years ago. And at this point, we could see that from 2013, we had 116 patients with SS over 40, and that had gone up 136 by 2017. And that's out of about 800 patients. And over 60, at that point, we had 41 patients over the age of 60, and that's increased. I need to update those figures, really. So that's all good. But I guess on the other side, we know that as people get older, they have more health problems. And a lot of these things are due to sickle. So this is quite a busy slide. This is from a paper that I wrote with Thuile Fain, who was one of the consultants at King's, who's now gone to America. And it just summarised all the things that we see in our older patients. And I'm sure you're aware of this, really. But people can get kidney problems, they get more anemic, they can start to get bone problems, get avascular necrosis. They can start to have strokes, they can get liver problems, they get leg ulcers, and they get eye problems. So that all sounds a bit awful, really. And we know that all these things basically get more as you get older. And then you've got all the other problems of getting older that everybody has, like high blood pressure and diabetes and getting arthritis. Ooh. And kidney disease. And what we kind of find that they seem to interact. So it's not like one and one makes two. It's like one and one makes three. So if you've got high blood pressure, just because anyone can get high blood pressure, but you've also got a bit of sickle kidney disease, they kind of multiply and become more of a problem than they might do after otherwise. And we see that quite a lot, that when people have got other health problems, it just seems to make the sickle worse. So, for example, we've got quite a few patients who might have lupus or might have diabetes, and that just seems to make the sickle worse as well. So what can we do? Well, one of the things is clinic review is really important. And I always think that coming to clinic is a bit like an MOT for your car. You go get your car serviced once a year. So you need to get kind of serviced once a year as well to make sure everything's working properly. And the kind of things we do are we obviously check your blood pressure and your oxygen levels. We check your blood tests, especially to look at what your kidneys are like and are you anemic or not, and is your liver okay, and is your vitamin D okay. And then we'll also check your urine tests, and that helps us work out if your kidneys are working okay. And then depending on what all those things show, we'd also do various other tests like a heart scan, a brain scan perhaps, test to see if your oxygen levels are okay at night, and refer you for eye review. And then if any of those things show problems, then we can act on them early. And I think that annual review, and that's been really quite hard during COVID because we haven't been seeing people. So I think now we're really trying to get everyone up at least once to get all your blood tests and all your other bits and pieces up to date. And then I guess the question is, what else can we do? Well, as you all know, I'm sure, we only have got two treatments available at the moment. One of them is hydroxycarbamide or hydroxyurea. So that's a pretty good drug. It's been around for a long time, since the 90s. We know that it reduces pain and it improves hemoglobin. We also know that it improves life expectancy. So if you look at people taking hydroxycarbamide and those not on hydroxycarbamide, there is some evidence that people actually live longer if they're taking it. It does have side effects. Blood count can be affected. You need regular blood tests. There are other kind of minor ones like skin pigmentation and nausea. And we have to say that it doesn't work for everyone. But it's certainly worth thinking about, especially if maybe you're becoming more anemic or you're getting a bit more pain. And then the other treatment is regular blood transfusion. And I would say that we've probably got about, out of our 800 and something adults, we've got about 160 patients on hydroxycarbamide and about 140 on transfusion. So quite evenly matched. And most of the people on transfusion are on exchanges. So when they go on the machine and we take the blood in and out, but also quite a lot just on top-up transfusions. One of the main problems is venous access. So it's, you obviously need two really good veins to have an exchange transfusion. Some people need femoral lines. That can be difficult. But it is really effective in stopping things getting worse. So if some damage has already been done, it might not reverse it, but it can stop progression. And there's also some other treatments we use. We use drugs for patients who've got protein in the urine. We treat anyone who had high blood pressure. And is there going to be more we can do in the future? Well, yes, there certainly is. So I guess what's quite exciting at the moment is there are lots and lots of new treatments on the way. So one of the ones that is the most far advanced is a treatment called crizanlizumab or Araclio. And that's a infusion of a monoclonal antibody, and that stops the blood being so sticky. It stops the sickle cells sticking together. And that's given as a once monthly infusion. So currently that's in trial, been approved in the States, and it's also got preliminary approval in Europe. And that's going through NICE at the moment. And we're hoping that they're going to approve that, although there's no guarantee of that. The other drug is a drug called Voxelotor or Oxbryta. That's a drug that you can take every day, and it stops the sickling. And improves hemoglobin. Doesn't show it improves pain or long-term outcomes yet. And that's also going through licensing. It's also available in the States. And there are lots and lots of new drugs coming in coming into trials at the moment. With there's three or four more trials that we're going to open over the next few months. And then the other thing is curative approaches. So obviously we've managed to get the government to agree to pay for adult transplants. And I think even in older adults, that is a real possibility, and we're hoping to start that program in June or July. So we'll actually be able to refer people for transplant if you've got a matched sibling who's of the same bone marrow type as you. And gene therapy is coming. There have been about 30 or 40 patients now had gene therapy. There have been a few concerns about that recently, and some of the trials have been stopped, but I think that is something that will be available kind of in the future. So the next thing is that we need more information. So most of what we know about people getting older with sickle has just come from observation, from looking at people. And there isn't very much really good data kind of looking at people in really detail over years to see what happens. So we've just managed to get a large grant to actually look at that and start studying it. It's taken me about 7 years to get some money for it. So this is really quite exciting. So this has just been passed through ethics last week, and we've actually got money for a 5-year study. And what we're going to start asking people when they come to clinic, hopefully in the next month or so, is if we can enroll you into this database study. And basically it's a database that we don't do anything extra. It's all stuff that we do normally, but we collect that on an anonymous database, and then we collect all the patients together and watch you every year for 5 years, and hopefully longer if we can get some more money, and actually see what happens. So watch your hemoglobin and watch echo changes and watch kidney function. And hopefully by looking at a lot of people, you know, all adults with that, we'll get some really useful information about what does happen really accurately when people get older. And then the other thing to say is there's a national registry. So that collects kind of compulsory data for NHS England. So much smaller amounts of data, but basically number of admissions, any serious events, are you on hydroxycarbamide or transfusion? And there's also a national bioresource. So this is actually taking blood samples and then looking at genetic variability in lots and lots of rare diseases, including sickle cell. And that's been shut during COVID, but hopefully we'll reopen that in the next month or so. And I think, you know, if I encourage people to join these studies, because I think the only way we're going to find out more about what happens and really start to intervene and change things is by getting more information. And then this is just kind of a summary, really. So older patients are complex. We're all complex, but I think particularly older patients with sickle are complex. And the more I work in sickle, the more I realise how complicated, really. You know, every single organ of the body, often unpredictable, and complications accumulate over time. And of course, you can have anything, all the normal age-related things as well, and they do seem to interact. So we certainly recommend regular reviews and to look for early signs of problems. We always have to look for other causes. There's a slide that we give to other doctors who manage sickle. I think we should be really looking at the new investigational therapies, and we shouldn't just be limiting to younger patients. I think we've been pushing quite hard to make sure the trials are open for patients in their 50s and 60s. And I think it's really important to see how these new drugs work in patients who are older. And I think we should be considering curative therapies. So having managed to get into England to pay for adult transplant was a major achievement. Although, of course, if we can offer them earlier in life, that's also good. And I guess just to finish, that although we've kind of defined older as being 40 years or more, 40 seems terribly young to me now.